Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a getaway Friday morning, Friday, April the 24th, 2026, 424-26. How about those numbers? Last Friday in the month of April, next Friday will be May Day, May the 1st. 14 coming up on 15 minutes past the hour. And boy, has it been a week for political shakeups. My goodness gracious, and we have had guests on virtually every day this week, so today we'll be on until 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and essentially we really don't have a whole lot of, I don't think we have any guests this morning scheduled, so we're going to leave the phone lines open to you to see what's going on, what you've thought, what you think's coming, any new news from you. It's always good to hear from the listening audience, and it's a good sign that we're starting off the morning with a phone call already on the line. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Christian. How you doing?
I am wonderful. What, we've got a week and a half until the election, and I've got about another week left of school, so all's well.
You know, I have felt that this May 5th primary, which is now just about 11 days away here, I have always felt that this may be as close to as interesting as the actual election will be, because for several reasons. A lot of these primaries have gotten very ugly. A lot of things are going on, and boy, this week certainly did not disappoint at all.
No, it didn't, and I think, I know a lot of the news this week was on the state level, but I really think locally, because, you know, you don't really have that many competitive general elections locally anymore, so that makes this upcoming primary all the more important to watch.
Absolutely true. Well, let's start from the top and work our way down, because, boy, what a week it was with the Heather Hill for Governor campaign. You and I got to know Heather somewhat well last year. She was at a few events that we were at. Always seemed nice enough, always seemed fine, no problems at all. And then she and her running mate, Stuart Motes, get into a kerfluffle last weekend that stretched on for about 5 days, and it got to the point to where Stuart resigned as her lieutenant gubernatorial campaign, and because we're so close to the primary, it took Heather out of the race. So not only being done in, but being done in by your lieutenant governor campaign partner with 11 days to go.
You know, ever since, because I didn't know who she was until we met at Mary Ellen's birthday party, I always thought her campaign was a little bizarre. You know, I always appreciate a political underdog, self-proclaimed outsider. But you really you've got to know when to hold them, and you've got to know when to fold them. And when you're running against hundreds of millions of dollars, you're running against no name recognition. You're running against the guy who has the endorsement of basically every large Republican entity in the state. I would say you fold him in that case. And, you know, I'm not quite sure who is telling her to continue on with this campaign even long ago. So, you know, this the way that I've seen her campaign, you know, on social media, it's just so bizarre. So, you know, when I saw this last Friday, it didn't surprise me. You know, she's, you know, sort of outsider candidate. You know, from what I've picked up on, when a candidate is doing a lot of their own, you know, they're running a lot of their own campaign, they're in a race they're not likely to succeed in, these sort of bizarre world things don't really surprise you. But
here, Here's what surprised me. She's always been a long shot. She certainly did not have the money that Casey Putch or Vivek Ramaswamy have. Casey Putch is a whole different story. We'll get there in just a second. But the thing about Heather Hill, there are candidates on May the 5th that are going to lose. And primarily, they will probably lose because they didn't have enough money, they didn't have enough name recognition, and they didn't have enough support. I don't begrudge her for going on. What the problem became this week is when you pick a fight that is so public. And not, you know, I look at the things that both of them called each other. It had nothing to do with policy. I mean, just to refresh people's minds, these were people running for governor, and they're not anymore. But this is what it devolved into. It was a week ago today, and Heather said that Motes made many disrespectful comments about his wife, making our female campaign advisors uncomfortable and leery. Then she went on to say that she believed that this is absolutely not a coincidence that he waited till right before the primary to pull this stunt. Politics is dirty, but we have to rise above it. And that's where she was last Friday. Then Stewart came back at her, and holy moly, let's just get some of these quotes in here. He called her a deranged lunatic narcissist. He said, well, then she made a claim that he was holding her too close at photo shoots. He said, we had two photo shoots where her half, and he used the R word for her husband, was the one taking the pictures. Trust me, there is no way on earth I would pull you close to me or put my arm around you, especially in the manner that your delusional lunatic mind has made up. You are physically disgusting. No one, even with a handful of blue pills, would be able to actually do anything with you. It's that repulsive. And the only thing more disgusting than you physically is what's on the inside. Your soul is black. And then Heather came back and said that past marriages had accused Stewart of physical abuse. And Stewart was on yesterday talking about how now his own church, where he does a Bible ministry, I think with the prisoners, they don't want him doing that anymore. Not necessarily sure that they believe this, but that because it's out there in the public, you know, perception becomes reality, they want him to step back from that. He said he wouldn't sue her. Now he's going to sue her because of the remarks made about his past marriages, because he thinks it's defamation. And not only that, he goes to the Secretary of State and resigns, which brings an end to her campaign. I mean, what did any of this have to do with policy, politics, what they're going to do for Ohio?
That initial post that Heather made last Friday, it was straight out of Marion Crime Chronicle. Like, it was just, you know, just the most unnecessary drama you have ever heard of. It was the, you know, this, like, as you said yesterday in your interviews both with Larry Barnett and with Stuart Motes, it's like, this stuff didn't need to become public. And if you, you know, any good person running a campaign would have had a grip on both candidates and would have had them sort of swallow this. And so, at least, you know you're not going to win the primary. And if you do win the primary, it would be probably the greatest upset in modern American political history. Let's just put it that way, with all due respect.
Let's not leave this out. The big accusation was by the Motes campaign, saying that Stewart had called her the N-word bitch. And apparently we found out yesterday that Heather never heard that remark was made in a phone conversation with Larry Barnett. Larry said yesterday it absolutely happened. Stewart, because of an NDA, he said he'd never said it, but he wouldn't say he never said it to Larry Barnett. I don't know. People will have to sort that one out. But, again,
My interpretation of that is obviously he spent much of the interview yesterday talking to and alluding to future lawsuits. And, you know, in that one big Facebook post that Heather Hill made, there were pictures of NDAs and such. So, I mean, I guess I don't blame him, but it's certainly not the most convincing thing in the world that he, you know, is not really digging into it. But, I mean, that's especially in politics and especially, you know, in local news the last couple of years, the danger of he said, she said, or I guess in this case, he said, it's just so dangerous. And I, you know, it's so easy to forget, you know, such a basic level, words, you know, if they're true or not, you know, words hurt, words change lives, words can ruin lives. So.
Well, and this is why I have always said over the years, if anybody attacks me, and I'm not a politician, I am not going to respond to it for this exact reason. A back and forth does nothing. It does not help anybody. It doesn't do anything good. If this would have stopped after the initial comments that Stewart was disrespecting women, if that was a conversation that could have been held internally or had internally, this would not have been what it became, and I believe Heather would still be in this race, even if Stewart wasn't running with her anymore. A matter of fact, I think he said that he would have left his name on the ballot, he just wouldn't have participated in the campaign.
And that's the other really fascinating thing, is that the, you know, Larry and, you know, Heather and the rest of sort of Heather's team didn't really try to keep this under wraps. Because I don't know how you know, or rather how you don't know, that if you get into this public spat with your running mate, he chooses to call off the dogs, your campaign is over. It's too close, you know. It shouldn't take all this sort of, you know, vague, oh, you know, we're going to speak with legal counsel, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. There is nothing they can do, you know. This campaign is over. And I'm just surprised that nobody really knew that going into this public argument with the running mate.
Well, and the other thing about this that I would just like to point out is, number one, if you have a disagreement with somebody, these two could have communicated with each other, but they chose to do it in the media. And I say that for all people, and everybody, I hope, who's hearing my voice right now, understands that when you have a spat with somebody, when you don't like something somebody does, you have two choices. You can be quiet about it. Well, you have three, actually. You can be quiet about it. You can contact them personally and say you don't like it, or you can do it in the media. And my belief is that if you don't contact them personally, the reason you're doing it in the media is you're trying to get attention, and it's ego. And that's what happened here. You had two egos, I believe, that ran up against each other, and it just slung mud nonstop for 5 days, and it ended in the destruction of a political campaign that somebody had been running for well over a year. Now, I don't know. Does politics breed ego? Maybe it does.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a sad situation all around. It just doesn't seem completely out of character for the sort of bizarre campaign that we have sort of come to see the last month to a year.
Well, and on that note, just to keep it moving here, Casey Putch appeared on this program for the second time in 2 weeks, and I guess apparently now he's the only other person in the gubernatorial primary against Vivek Ramaswamy. He comes on Wednesday this week. We talk about the remarks he made that people have said were pro-Nazi. We talked about the remarks, or the video, that people said was racist, cowboys and Indians, about Vivek Ramaswamy. And in the interview, I ask him if he'll denounce anti-Semitism, if he'll denounce racism, and he says no. Now, what did you make of that?
You know, based on everything that I've heard about Casey Butch before that interview, you know, of course, you know, I had all the context going in. Nothing surprised me about it. But it's, you know, it's going to be a real, it's going to say so much about what is really deeply seated inside of the modern Republican Party in Ohio if he gets a fair percent of the vote anywhere. Which, of course, this is the essence of what we'll be looking at on election night. How much of the vote he can get in these rural counties, because if Vivek Ramaswamy is losing much of any fair percent of the vote at all, guy who will not denounce anti-Semitism, who, you know, has certainly not tried to distance himself from Hitler, let's just put it that way. If Vivek Ramaswamy is losing parts of the vote to this guy, that, one, says so much, you know, a lot of bad things about the state of the Ohio Republican Party at its roots. And it speaks to the weakness of Vivek Ramaswamy. You know, he's losing that to a Republican, and that's going to bode well, obviously, for the Democrat in November. So I think, yeah, it's not surprising you have a fringe candidate on the Republican side who is, you know, he's not trying to at all conceal or downplay potentially anti-Semitic things he said in the past, things that would connect him to Adolf Hitler. Not that he's leaning into it, but he's certainly not trying to walk away from it.
But you know what's interesting is it doesn't seem to be a turnoff to the people who like him, and it doesn't seem to disqualify him from getting votes. I it used to be if you would say something anti-Semitic, if you would say something or do something that was termed as racist, even if people liked your policies, even if people didn't like the other guy, they would certainly maybe denounce what you say. Has anybody done that?
Absolutely not. We no longer live in the era where words are disqualifying. I mean, go to Trump. You know, Trump in, you know, 2016 is example A, you know. So if people, you know, if the big issue for a lot of people on the far right of the Republican Party is, you know, they are wary of Vivek Ramaswamy for whatever personal reasons they have, you know, I'm sure reasons we've discussed prior on your show, you and I, they're going to vote for Casey Butch. And, you know, if that's what they want, then that's why we have a primary. You know, that's why, you know, that's, I guess that is why candidates run in primaries, is to give people an alternative. You know, I guess that's why Heather Hill ran, but, you know, Casey has more money. He's able to, you know, make a statement out there. You know, in all of the Facebook comment sections and all the, I guess, internet comment sections, there was something about Vivek Ramaswamy. You wouldn't see detractors in the comments saying, vote for Heather Hill. It was always, vote for Casey, vote for Butch. So I think that's pretty interesting that he's had this really core block of support. And, you know, as I've been poring over the numbers, you know, for past, recent Republican primaries up and down the ticket in the city of Marion and in Marion County, it's really going to be interesting to compare his performance to, you know, the last gubernatorial election and the other Republican races.
Well, let's come to the commissioner's race here in Marion. We've got a four-way race, which is essentially going to give us the next county commissioner. No Democrat running for that seat. So you've got Ken Stuyvesant, you've got Christy Neff, you've got Tim Mooney, and you've got Jason Schauber. How do you see this one?
So this is really interesting because three of the four candidates have been on the ballot for commissioner within the last 4 years, of course, in 22, when, you know, Stuyvesant ran for re-election, he lost in a close race to, obviously, Mark Davis, and that's when Jason Schaffer was on the ballot as well. Move to 2024, you know, you have Jason Schaffer and Kevin Davidson and running for the seat held by Kerr Murray, and then you had Tim Mooney running against Andy Appelfeller. So you have pretty good points of comparison for everyone on the ballot, except for Christy Neff, but obviously you would group, group Neff, Stuyvesant, and Mooney in one camp, and then you'd group Jason Schaffer in the other, just because, you know, he is the one who is not in, he's the one who is most likely to not be in favor with the local Republican Party, being primaried out of office, most likely to speak up against the mayor and city administration. So I think there are two likely outcomes, three. I've tried to, talk to people who, live in, can live in town and can kind of give me some idea. I've been, doing a lot of reading on, different threads on the internet and such, and I feel like one plausible outcome, I think Jason Schaffer is going to be the one that has the strongest core block of support, because, he is the more unique candidate. And he's going to have a more diverse, array. He's going to be the, if any independents or Democrats are pulling a Republican ballot, it's going to be for Jason Schaffer. So he's going to have that block of support that I don't think it's going to change all that much, but it's going to be very strong. So you could have Jason Schaffer with a strong block of the vote, and then the other three candidates are really at each other's throats. It's all very close, and as we saw in the at-large city council race last year, you're going to see Jason Schaffer win in large part due to the fact that the other three Republicans have really heavily split the vote amongst each other. Then the other scenario would sort of, just based on my observations, you set aside Schaffer, you set aside Ken Stuyvesant, and it's a two-horse race between Christy Neff and Tim Mooney, and this is why I say that. Tim Mooney ran in 24, and he had a very good showing eastern half of Marion County. If you were to look at a map, eastern half of the county, would all be colored in for Tim Mooney. And, I don't think he came super close, but he put up a respectable showing against Andy Appelfeller, who's been on the ballot probably longer than most people have been alive. So you have that. You have the endorsement of the Fraternal Order of Police, which in Marion especially, law enforcement is so closely intertwined with our politics. The mayor is the former police chief. Current police chief runs the Ohio FOP, has high standing in the national FOP. I mean, that's an important endorsement to get here. And then, of course, Christy Neff, her husband was a very influential former city councilman, and I wouldn't be surprised, he still has a pretty big role running the party locally. And she's got, this is a funny little tidbit, but she's got the Mike Bodine campaign marketing group on her, doing her signs and stuff. And all of those candidates are undefeated when it comes to elections. So, she's got a lot of name recognition in the city. Mooney's got it out in the county, so I think.
And Stuyvesant's a former commissioner.
He is, but you're really not seeing that much out of him, in my opinion. But, so, I don't know. If the election were held today, the more likely scenario of the two would be, I would say it would be Tim Mooney and Christy Neff, not at each other's throats, but that would be the most likely outcome, and I would put it up to a coin flip between those two.
But see, here's the problem with that I see at this point. Let's say they're the two top dogs in the Republican Party. Okay, at some point, they're going to split that vote some way. Now, one of them is going to get more votes than the other, but they're going to split that hardcore Republican vote. Stuyvesant is not going to get zero votes. So, no matter how many votes he gets, he's also of that hardcore Republican group. So, is he going to take more votes away from Neff, or is he going to take more votes away from Mooney? So, you take the Mooney-Neff split, then you've got to see where Stuyvesant is taking votes away from, Jason Schauber, I don't think, has to fight with any of these people for votes.
No,
I think he's got that block. And so I can't say, if it were Neff, Mooney, and Schauber, there's a good chance, I think, that Neff or Mooney might win. But as you said, if Neff took the eastern part, and let's say Mooney took the eastern part of Marion County, and Neff takes the old Apfeller area, I think Stuyvesant is going to cut into some of the old Apfeller area, and Jason Schauber is going, even if he finished second in all these areas, he could still win the race because of the split in the vote.
I know, and there's, there's going to be a lot of precinct by precinct small numbers that we can look at on election night that I'll be sure to bring. And we've got maps and everything. It'll be real high tech. But, I think Jason Schauber's the one that, he's not coasting into election day because, you know, anything can, but he's the one who, like you said, has to do the least in terms of his people are going to vote for him regardless, whereas the other three, you know, if there were a three-sided coin and, you know, you were a Republican in Marion County, I would say, you know, it would be a flip of a coin to determine who you're going to vote for. And if those three more hardcore Republican, which this is crazy that we're saying this because Jason Schauber, you know, ultra-conservative, you know, Republican guy, but because he just so happens to be at odds with the local Republican Party on local issues, he's been painted as this outcast. I get that's how local politics works, but it's just ridiculous to me.
Well, all I'll say is we just go back to the last commissioner race, which was in 24, and that was a three-way race. You had sitting Commissioner Kerr Murray, you had Kevin Davidson, and you had Jason Schauber, and Kerr Murray and Kevin Davidson split that hardcore Republican Party vote so much that Schauber finished second. Kerr Murray, the sitting commissioner, finished third. So, I mean, let's say Stuyvesant is in that third place spot. Well, it is completely possible. Let's say the Kevin Davidson vote from that election is split between Neff and Mooney with a little edge to one of them. Well, that could easily take Schauber's percentage from second to first.
Absolutely. And, you know, if go back to the at-large council race last year. Now, just for the sake of numbers, Scott Kreider finished first overall by like half a percentage point because amongst the three or four other Republicans in the race, it was so close. And that's, you know, that is Schauber's best, you know, I want to say his really only bet. The other three Republicans are so, or if, even the other two are so at each other's throats. And, you know, that other vote is, you know, split. Allows him to open the door.
You know why I put so much into Schauber on this? Because here's the problem. Let's say Schauber, and I can't remember the percentage he... Do you remember the percentage he got in 24?
I think it was 30 or 31%, and I think Davidson ended up with 39.
Okay. Let's say Schauber gets 30%. Let's say that's the outcast vote. Okay. That leaves 70% for the Republicans. Okay. Let's say Stuyvesant is not going to get under 20% of the vote. He's just not going to be that low. So let's give Stuyvesant last place, if he is the weakest candidate, let's give him 20% even. Okay, that's 50% of the vote. So then you've got Neff and Mooney campaigning hard. Do you really think that Neff or Mooney is going to be able, that remaining 50% block of the Republican vote, which would normally be the hardcore Republican vote after Stuyvesant's taking 20, you really think one of them is going to be able to run it up over 30%? If you split it right down the middle, it's 25 apiece. You think that one of them is going to defeat the other like 33 to 22? I don't think that's going to happen.
I think you're right, but I am keeping my, you know, we are in Marion hat on, and we have yet to really see a big shock to the, you know, Republican elite here in both in the city and the county. So, you know, that's something that I'm still keeping in the back of my mind. But
here's something from one of the listeners this morning. Bodine's candidates are not undefeated. One that comes to mind is the second ward. Ayers beat him. Mike is not well respected either. He accomplished nothing while on council, and frankly, rarely gave an opinion. He was terrible. Within the party, they are not well liked. Huge split with Collins and his people for sure. Stuyvesant has more name recognition than he has given him credit for. A certain portion of people will vote for him because he is the only name that they know, and he also has a huge name recognition. He was the only one that spoke at the Harding Day dinner, Stuyvesant, and also he's got a huge following in the ag community. And that's why I don't think Stuyvesant, even if he is the weakest campaigner, I don't think he's going to get below 20% of the vote. And if he does get 20, that leaves 50 for the other two. This is a good year for Jason Schauber.
That was valuable insight, actually, as to the inner workings of the, you know, how...
And Collins is split with the NEFs.
Okay, well, that... See, I wouldn't have gathered that based on my previous observations. So that's a good call. And yeah, that... I mean, everything that I just heard is, you know, would make Jason Schauber smile. He does have the unique distinction. He's the only one who's run twice. And so, you know, he sort of knows, you know, and he just, you know, ran for his council seat again last year. So it was in a very close and bitter primary. So if someone has the, tactical campaign skills, it would be him. So... I don't know, but as you said, he doesn't need that much to open up the door. And once that door's open, he's going to knock it down. Now, here's a thought that came to me yesterday surrounding a sore loser law of sorts. You know, does the Republican Party, do they file an independent to, you know, or not officially, but do they get a Tim Mooney to run against Schauber in the general election as a write-in or as an independent? Because you can guarantee that if Jason Schauber wins the Republican primary, everyone in, you know, the Republican establishment won't be happy with that.
Are the Democrats going to have a write-in? Democrats could do very well this year if Amy Acton does well, if Vivek Ramaswamy does poor, if Sherrod Brown does well, if Husted does poor. The down ticket vote could be very good for the D. They've got nobody running for this position.
I think, especially after 20, and this is what I said immediately after 24 and the struggle to find council candidates. I mean, people put a lot of stake in the 24, and granted, that's not the year. If you want any chance, the Democrat in an area like Marion, it has to be a midterm year or an off year. You can't run as a Democrat in a county like this when Republican turnout in a presidential year will be high. So a lot of people put stake into that election. And then we just got the teeth kicked out of us. So I think people are still, you know, hesitant to put their name up on the board. But what sort of gives me hope is now we have a new candidate in Kent Halloran that, you know, hasn't run before. So I'm sort of hopeful that, you know, that might happen. But we, you know, I think the Democrats need to see, first of all, who wins the primary. And then if it's, you know, Jason Schauber, do you sort of swallow it and say, that's probably the best we'll get, especially if another Republican tries to run against him, and, you know, as a write-in or as an independent, how would that work? Because, I just don't see the Republican Party of Marion County just sort of laying down and accepting the party of accepting election results.
Well, I will say this. When you have a four-person race like this and 11 days left to go, Cinco de Mayo is the day of the primary. If whichever candidate does something in the last 4 to 5 days of this race that really gets people's attention, you know, who's the most creative? That could mean something in a race this close, and I believe it will be close.
Yeah, and I hope on election night we can get some results before midnight. I hope that we can get some nitty gritty precinct by precinct numbers so we can sort of compare where, you know, people are at this year compared to where they were when they last ran, because that's really going to give us some insight and things to talk about.
Well, with 10 minutes left in this first hour here this morning, winning the award for the nastiest campaign, I believe.
I forgot about this one.
Oh, yes. The 86th District Republican primary. Heaven, holy mackerel. You've got Ben Weber, you've got Weslyn Davis, and you know what? I don't know what's happened there, but Ben Weber, I drive through Marion. We're talking, he's got a billboard sign in front of the mall. He's got a billboard sign in Jack Kellogg's yard on the boulevard. There's another billboard sign on the boulevard. You drive down Barks Road, it's all Ben Weber signs. You see Ben Weber signs all through Marion. You go down through Union County, you see the Ben Weber billboard signs. Ben Weber is doing mailers. I think he's done one or two of them that are making Weslyn out to be weak on open borders. It definitely seemed as if Ben was more welcomed at the Harding Day dinner last week than Weslyn was. Ben is running commercials, professionally done commercials on Weslyn. And Weslyn essentially at this point seems to be saying, listen, you know, he's being supported by big money. They're trying to take me out, and kind of running a Facebook campaign. I think she's in trouble.
I think Weslyn's Facebook campaign, I mean, that works when you're running for Marion City Council against no opposition, but, you have to keep in mind,
Oh, and by the way, to make point, yes. Ben Weber, endorsed by Jack Kellogg, the only person who got a standing ovation at the Harding Day dinner, and also endorsed by the person who currently holds that seat and defeated Weslyn in the last primary, Tracy Richardson.
So, a note on that, I think the most interesting numbers to look at will be the 2024 primary for the seat in Marion County. Those numbers cross-referenced with the 2022 governor primary, because odds are you're going to have the Richardson and DeWine block are going to stay the same, and then you're going to have, you know, every precinct that voted a majority against DeWine and for in 22 and for Weslyn Davis in 24, those would sort of be the two big voting blocks to watch out for, and those pro-DeWine Richardson counties on election night, if Ben Weber is knocking it out of the park in those precincts, you can probably call the race before it's over. But
didn't Tracy win that primary with Weslyn by 20% of the vote?
Yeah, she did, and Weslyn didn't. I mean, she won a couple of precincts. I think, you know, southern part of the city. She won a couple precincts in the sixth ward, a couple precincts in Pleasant Township. The map is, you look at it and it's really strongly painted for Richardson. But, you know, I think you really underestimate if you were Weslyn Davis how much stake that the special interest groups and the PACs will put into a primary like this. I mean, all these small town, rural state house primaries around the state, I mean, they really put a ton of stake into them. So, she's finding that out the hard way, and, you know.
I just can't believe how she's almost become a non-entity. Because in the beginning, if you would have went back to December and January, she was everywhere. She was everywhere. The signs were everywhere. And as soon as Ben got his campaign ratcheted up, you would hardly know she's running now if you went through Marion County. There are very few signs compared to the number of signs he has. He's doing these mass mailers. He's got a huge Facebook presence now. Shows every day that he's out there dropping literature. He had his literature with him at the Harding Day dinner. He got the endorsement of Tracy Richardson. He got the endorsement of Jack Kellogg. He's got his signs in the right places. And she's basically on Facebook saying, listen, you know, he's got all the money. They're out to knock me out here. He's got all the data center money, and they're out to knock me off. It sounds a little victimish, and I'm not sure if voters like that.
No, and it's ironic that a Republican is complaining about money in politics when, it was their Supreme Court decision that paved the way for all this big money in politics with Citizens United in 2010. So, I think that, Wesley Davis is kind of learning. She's learning it the hard way, unfortunately. And it's, when we get the numbers back on election night.
I want to get your prediction on this one. But here's the thing that I have paid attention to, because I am interested in this race, because I don't vote in it because I'm not in the 86th district. But the interesting thing to me is, if I ask a Republican who you're voting for, the people who vote for Wesley will just say, I'm voting for Wesley. Okay. But if people say they're voting for Ben, I say, why are you voting for Ben? They will say, I don't like her. I don't like the things she's said. I don't like the things she's done. I don't like the things she's done to people. And I think that group includes a lot of people. I think that group includes the nasty campaign against Tracy Richardson in 2024. I think that includes the nasty campaign against Ben Weber right now. I think that includes the things she did in injecting herself into the Jason Schaber campaign. For primary for city council, and I think she aligned herself with people who were also not liked by a large group of people, maybe not the majority, but a large group of people, and nobody seems to dislike Ben Weber. He might not be their choice, but they don't dislike him. She has a huge likability problem.
Which is, I feel like the only candidates that have likability problems. I mean, like this is the same conversation that would be had on CNN about a Kamala Harris or a Hillary Clinton, and it's just this still the sad state of our politics that the only candidates that we have to talk about their likability issues are female candidates. But it doesn't help when you. For instance, when you join the big gang up on a well-respected city councilman just for the purpose of getting your name out there and helping your campaign. I mean, I remember when you were asking her about Ralph Smith, it was just sort of vague, she's just trying to do this to be a good foot soldier, but she knew nothing about Ralph Smith. She knew nothing about Jason Schaber of the Third Ward. So, that was interesting to say the least.
Well, and she made an enemy of Tracy Richardson. You can guarantee that.
Yeah, and it doesn't help. I mean, she should have seen the money coming because she saw, the mailers and the automated texts and all that were sent out against her in 2024. So, I think, and especially in smaller community, people are definitely more close-knit than in other places. You cannot be this overwhelmingly negative person. Even though national politics is so ugly and nasty, I think she thought those same tactics would work here, and obviously they're failing. They're failing her.
No, it was, and I don't think she ever really answered questions that were brought up about her campaign early. I think she just said they're out to get me. That seems to be her big response to everything. Was, you know, anytime a negative story came out early, well, they're out to get me. So we're hearing that now that we're seeing the Ben money come into play, they're out to get me. Well, okay.
But that's what Trump said. Like, you know, his whole, I really think she thinks she can use the Trump playbook in a state house race. Like, you know, the whole, you know, yeah, like, I am fighting back against the deep state somehow, and, you know, Ben Weber's a secret radical Democrat. Like, these things, that they make no sense, and it's like, if you were a better-known commodity, like, if you had really done something noteworthy to stand up to data centers, not just sit on a, as a township trustee, which there's nothing wrong with that, but, you know, it's like, why, if there's some grand conspiracy against you from all the big PACs, if there's a grand conspiracy, why would it be against you?
And by the way, again, former Mayor Jack Kellogg endorsed her, Tracy Richardson endorsed her, and Mayor Bill Collins has not endorsed anybody in this race. And I think those are the endorsements in Marion County that count. So,
you've got several members of at least the old city council that endorsed Leslyn Davis, but, I mean, you know, who's going to take the word of the council president or a member of council former mayor, you know, the guy who everybody loves, you know, right. Things like that. I don't think that's something that's going to happen.
Well, mayors just have more recognition. That's why you look to Bill Collins and Jack Kellogg, and Tracy Richardson holds the seat now, and I think that's why they're the three most important endorsements. But quick, we're running out of time this hour. Who's the prediction in that race?
If you talked to me, you know, in November, December, I would have said Leslyn Davis, but, you know, Ben Weber really, he and his pack have really kicked it into gear, so I would say Ben Weber.
Do you think it'll even be close? I mean, do you think it'll be a 20%er again like last time?
I think if Leslyn Davis can keep it within like 12 to 15, it would be a good night for her.
All right. Hey, Christian, hopefully you can stay with us this morning and listen, and if anything else catches your ear, you'll give us a buzz.
Yes, I will.
Thanks, Christian. Bye-bye. Christian Pearson, there's your election analyses. We're coming back. Open phone lines. Don't go anywhere if you got something to say.
Well, my mind was that blue, but I owned a theater and I owned a jazz supper club, so all the money went.